Good morning, everyone. We're reading in Book 10, Canto 4, The Dream Twilight of the Earthly Real. And we've reached page 655. And I think we should start reading at line 509. Thus man at once is animal and God. I think we'll start at the back this time. Patty, would you start?
Thus man at once is animal and God. A disparate enigma of God's mate, unable to free the Godhead's form within. A being less than himself, yet something more. The aspiring animal, the frustrate God. Yet neither beast nor deity, but man. But man, tied to the kind, earth's labor strives to exceed, climbing the stairs of God to higher things. Objects are seemings, and none knows their truth. Ideas are guesses of an ignorant God. Truth has no home in earth's irrational breast. Yet without reason, life is a tangle of dreams. But reason is poised above a dim abyss and stands at last upon a plank of doubt. Eternal truth lives, not with mortal man.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. Man, yeah. Eternal truth lives not with mortal men. This is death speaking, his characterization, man, living in the world of duality as a disparate enigma, a riddle with parts which are disparate. They're not harmonized, they are not not unified. Yes.
Yet something more. this more is the aspiration?
Yes, it's our divine part, our soul. No? We are less than ourselves in our animal parts, and yet we are something more in our divine part, in our soul part.
We are urged here to tell the truth.
Yes, here in Oroville, you mean?
Yes.
Yes. But and not only to tell the truth, but to try to serve the truth.
Right.
Yes.
And yet we cannot know.
Yes, that's what he is always trying to be so discouraging, no? That truth, eternal truth, lives not with mortal men. Of course, in a way it is true, but that doesn't mean that we can't have any kind of contact with truth and that we can't aspire to truth.
But it seems to me that it's saying the only thing we can do is to tell the truth as we see it.
That's a good start, isn't it? Yes.
Oh, that's at the bottom.
He speaks here about reason, no? Without reason, life is a tangle of dreams. So there's a sense in which, at our present stage of evolution, reason is, in a way, the highest light that we have. But still, because we've got a soul, we can have another kind of contact with truth. Savitri will doubtless explain that. We can't expect that kind of explanation from death, because he's doesn't want to encourage us. Yes.
But interesting is the first line, thus man at once is animal and
Yes, we're this funny kind of mixture, no?
It's a paradox, is God as a paradox for King.
Yeah. And this is this disparate enigma. We have these contradictory, mysterious parts. We are a mystery to ourselves. We are unable to free the Godhead's form within, that our own embodied, individualized divinity. We are aspiring animals, frustrated gods, at least mental gods. And in fact, we are neither of those things. We are man, human beings, tied to this species that we belong to. Here the word kind refers to the species. We are humankind. That's the race we belong to. And Earth's labor, even death acknowledges it, the effort of the Earth, the evolutionary effort, is to go beyond humankind. It's climbing, trying to climb the stairs, the different levels of evolution to higher things. We don't have true knowledge. Objects, all these things that we see and experience as objects outside ourselves, are only seemings, appearances, and none of us really knows the inner truth of any of them. We may have ideas, we have lots and lots of ideas. We may have ideas about how things really are, what is the truth and what is the reality. But these are just guesses, speculations of this ignorant mental God that we are. So he keeps insisting, there's no place for truth here. Truth has no home in Earth's irrational breast. This Earth nature is irrational. It's not subject to reason. And then he makes a little jump. He says, but without reason, or reason itself, is poised above a dim abyss and takes its ground, its last ground, on a plank of doubt. It's that image of the pirates capturing you and making you walk the plank. You'll get suspended over an abyss. You will fall into this abyss of doubt. Yes.
I wonder about the, you know, kind.
Yes.
K-I-N-D. Humankind. And also you talk about kindness. Can kind to ourselves, each other, or like something? Or, I don't have any.
Well, these are two different senses that the word has. And several times in the poem, Sri Aurobindo uses this word in the sense of species, the human species. He says that Savitri, all in her, pointed to a nobler kind, to a higher species. Of course, and then it's a noun, no, kind. And of course, we should be kindly, we should be humane to each other, but we are not always. We should have higher qualities than the beasts, no? But sometimes we see how kind the beasts are to each other. Some are just amazing sometimes. Shall we read on? Would you read?
Or if she dwells within thy mortal heart, show me the body of the living truth, or draw for me the outline of her face, that I too may obey and worship her. Then will I give thee back thy Satyavan. But here are only pen.
Thank you. So she here is truth, eternal truth. So again, he's challenging her. If you're carrying the truth within you, then show me. Show me the body, the physical vessel of the living truth. Or at least draw for me the outline of her face, that I too may obey and worship her. Then I'll give you back Satyavan. It's a very mocking sort of challenge. No? I know you can't do it, sort of thing. Yeah. Here on earth are only facts and law, so strong as if it's been bound with steel, laws that cannot be broken. The truth that I know is that Satyavan is dead. And even all your sweetness, Savitri, can't draw him back again to life on earth. No magic truth can bring the dead to life. No power of earth can cancel the thing once done. No power in the manifestation can cancel something, or no material power can cancel something that's happened, something that has been done. We often wish that we could wipe things out, no? That they hadn't happened. But they do, and our emotions, no joy of the heart can last surviving death. No bliss, it doesn't matter what ecstasy you have experienced, can persuade the past to live again. But again, he wants to persuade her to go back. Life alone can solace, can bring comfort to the silent emptiness, filled with thought, the emptiness of time. So leave your dead and go back to earth and live. That's what he wants her to do. Yes.
And you already said that ideas are guesses.
Yes.
So same, of the same category.
They are a similar category, yes. We can keep ourselves occupied with thought, even if they are only guesses, speculation. It's some kind of expression of our humanity.
I feel also this line, no magic truth can bring the dead to life. That is not true. It's happened so often. Yeah? There are so many stories about how dead people were brought to life again. Continue.
Then the people say, oh, they weren't really dead at all.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
They've just been revived. Yeah.
Actually, when reading this, apart from spirituality in anything, just following the logic of this reasoning, that he says that the whole thing is dualism and one is negating the other, he is contradictory to himself.
Yes.
Dying, be except from this general view of this.
Both things, yeah.
You know, he speaks maybe clearly. Just when you listen to his, what he does, why should die? Although the gravity of the fact of God gives us the impression that it's in all the good of all. However, the general view is contradictory.
Yes. So Savitri is going to answer him. Now, a long answer. It extends up to page 663, line 795. Oh, who's next there? I can't see. Chun-hee, would you read?
Answered, that might be shame. And as she spoke, for own black shadow on his hand, as leaving the night takes the world away. And there with him is crying, clinging,
yes.
Clinging in conscious force of God, unconscious thou art, the dark test of his ignorance, thou art the impenetrable sun, of his vast, penetrous warmth, the natural child, on his immortality, the sinister power.
Thank you. So he has challenged her to show him the truth. And that's now what she's going to do, show to us also a wonderful truth behind this mystery of duality. She reveals something of her own divinity. Her goddess self grew visible in her eyes. Light came, a dream of heaven, into her face. Sorry?
Impenitent.
Yes. Impenitent, yes. Let's look.
She doesn't know the meaning.
Yes, I know. I will. Impenitent, it means that you can't repent. If somebody's impenitent, they don't regret their wrongdoings or their imperfections. Yes, we'll see what it means in the context. So first, she reminds him that yes, maybe the world is full of contradictions, black and white, yes and no, duality of all kind. But behind all that, the divine is there. Even you, death, you too are God. And yet, not him in his true form, complete form, only his own black shadow, on his own path. I think this means the evolutionary path, as the divine involved in the inconscience, moves upward on the evolutionary path. There's this shadow ahead of him, his own black shadow, which is imposed on him, on us, on all earth creatures, by the fact that we've come from the inconscient. That is to say that our mortal bodies have come from the inconscient. So as we leave that night of inconsciousness, take the upward way, we are carrying with us its clinging, inconscient force. An unconscious force clings to us. So you are like the leader, the dark head or leading point of God in his unconscious state. The fact that you, death, exist and claim to rule everything. You are the impenitent sign. You don't regret being this. You don't apologize for it. You are boasting about it. Of his ignorance, this temporary state that God is in as he evolves. You are the natural child of the vast, tenebrous womb, this womb from which we have all been born, this womb of darkness, of the inconscient. On God's immortality, you are like a black stripe, a sinister bar. Sometimes Sri Aurobindo uses words or expressions from the language of heraldry. I've spoken about this before, perhaps, that the aristocrats and nobles, royalty in Europe, they have badges, shields and flags which use a special language to declare their status, which family they are from. And if you happen to be the illegitimate child of a noble family, you can wear, you can use their signs, but it has a black stripe pointing downwards to the left, the sinister bar. Sinister means the left hand. No? It also has another meaning, something that's sinister, it's threatening, it is frightening. Yeah. But basically it refers to the left hand. Yeah. So look at the meaning of the sentence. God is immortal. You too are a child of that immortality, but you're wearing this black stripe, you know, to show that you are God, but not He. Yes, Anandi.
Yeah, natural child.
Yeah, it's the same meaning. Same meaning. A child that's born out of wedlock. Yes. Kyung-ye?
All contrives are an effect of God's head. How many are the ignorable ones? The one head is the least truth in his day. He is the impersonal, incredible soul.
Inscrutable.
He is the one infinite person, seeing his world. The silence, the fear, are eternal great being praised. He is right in spirit.
Inspires. Reluctant.
Reluctant and unseeing God.
Thank you. This is a truth that it's very difficult for us to deal with mentally. All contraries, all opposites and contradictions, all dualities, they are all aspects of the One, of His face, different faces that He presents to us. All these many, many, many individual beings, they are all the innumerable One, the One expressing Himself in innumerable individualities. He's carrying all this, all these disparatenesses, contraries, contradictions, clashes in His heart. He is impersonal. He is inscrutable, mysterious. We can't read Him. He is alone. He is the one infinite person seeing His world, looking at all these aspects of Himself, playing Himself out through them. So even that silence and emptiness, He has put His seal and stamp on it. His light inspires the eternal Word, the word of creation that says yes to all this. He is that deep and deathless hush of the immobile. It's calm, it's white and signless, blank, negating calm. That calm that seems to say no to everything. And yet, at the same time, he is the creator self, which has produced all of this out of himself. The Almighty Lord. He's watching his will being done by these forms of gods, of which you, death, are one. He's one of these forms. And he watches his will done through the desire that's always pushing half-conscious man. And he's seeing his will done through the night, the reluctant and unseeing night, the night that doesn't see that it's being driven by the divine and which resists that drive of the divine will. It's reluctant. He watches his will done by the forms of gods, by the desire that goads half-conscious man, and he watches his will being done even by the reluctant and unseeing night. Okay?
Yeah, I had a different reading as I was asking.
How would you read it?
Well, I was just asking. The desire that goads the reluctant and unseeing night?
No, it says it goads half-conscious man. Well, maybe that desire also drives the reluctant and unseeing night. You can read it like that. Yeah. But I prefer to see what's being done. His will is done by all these things. This means the night of unconsciousness. Yeah. Claude, would you read?
Why the divine extreme, this imperfect power, utter light under the glorious God. Existence balanced between balance twixt to the mighty arm. Confront the mind with unsolved abysm of thought. Darkness below, the fathomless light above. In light outjoined, but sundered by severing mind. Come face to face, opposite, inseparable, two contraries needed for a great world past, two poles whose currents wake the immense world force. In the stupendous secrecy of itself, above the world moving physical wings, he is being one, beginningless with beginningless. Ascending doors, he enters the absolute.
Thank you.
Right and left side. This is immortality and mortal.
Well, it's all these contraries and opposites. These lines are like a commentary on this mysterious passage we read last week about the white head and black tail of the mystic drake, no? The swift and the lame foot, wing strong, wing broken. This great surreal dragon in the skies. Death presents it as an irreconcilable mystery, an eternal world of duality. No? But Savitri is saying, this is all one. These are all aspects of God. No? These wide, divine extremes that seem to be so completely separated, these inverse powers which seem to contradict themselves, there, the right and the left side of the body of God. And existence is balanced between these two powerful arms. So this confronts our mind with these unsolved abysms of thought. We simply can't grasp it. There's a darkness below the darkness of inconscience. There's a supreme light above. In light, in knowledge, these are joined. They are seen to be one. But they are sundered. They are separated by our severing mind, which cuts things up into bits. So to us, they seem to stand face to face, opposite. They're inseparable, but they're contradictory. And these two contraries are both needed for God's great world task. They're like two poles of a magnet with currents passing between them. And those currents, positive and negative, that's what wakes up the immense world force. In himself, in the stupendous secrecy of his self, brooding above the world on his two equal wings. They maybe look black and white to us, but they are equal. No? He is both in one, beginningless, without end. And he transcends them both. He enters the absolute. So if we say God is the key, this is the way in which he's the key. But to use that key, we have to do something with our mind. It can't... You want to say something, Anandi?
This reminds me when Mother said that our challenge nowadays is to put the opposite together. It's our real challenge. How to do that?
But at the same time, we're supposed to distinguish between them.
Yeah, but put it together.
It's very interesting that in the Life Divine there's this chapter on the origin and remedy of all error, falsehood, and pain and evil. And there he says that these things have no absolute existence, no permanent truth. But for us in our present evolutionary stage, it's very important that we distinguish between them. This is part of our evolution. So
I was thinking of it in a different way.
Yes.
That in this, the light are joined but sundered by sailing mind.
We make the distinction.
Yeah. But in dialogue, we see in others what we don't see in our own mind, and we think that they're the other.
Yes.
When in actual, they're part of
yes.
our thinking. So that's valuable.
Of course, that's what he says, that all this is necessary for the great world task.
Yeah. So to share your limited helps others to see their own.
Yes. There are these other kinds of opposites.
You are not the others.
Yes.
You share with the other to see yourself.
Yeah. Right. Today in our
it's a little bit different.
Well, it's the same.
You know what helps me a lot when you talk about realities? Not the computer language, binary language is built up by 0 and 1. Not only these two ciphers, numbers are very imaginative in this relation, but if you think God is a computer man who writes programs, he mm-hmm. everything does with 0 and 1. You can do any combination you want.
Yeah.
So when you are with anything, it's just in 0 and 1. It's okay. Slowly, slowly you come to it. I don't know, you made myself do it.
So we could say this is 0.
You see everything is 0 and 1.
So you could say that the 0 and the 1, for example, are the emptiness and the fullness. And you can say that they are the impersonal and the personal. The one is the. Yes, yes. So, yeah. Thanks, Tom. So the currents between these two aspects of the One, this is what wakes up the immense world force and makes everything active. Otherwise, it's absolute, it's static, it's eternal, it's infinite. But in the creative process, at least this particular creative process that we are involved in, this duality is. And he says they're the two wings of our ascent. It's not only they're the two wings of God, for us too, they're the two
the
wings.
The mind of God, one of the first, is he makes everything duality, no?
Yes, yeah.
But there's one thing, when he confronts us to man, he says animal, man, and God.
Yeah, three
things, yeah. That's the only language three. Everything is duality.
He's the one.
In this, I'm just finishing this book, by Sapren. It's the first time I'm reading it, but I've been working with this deeply for almost 3 months now, and it's just blown me away. And so my question is, this currents, could that be something like the electrical fire? Why didn't that?
Well, that's one manifestation of it. Magnetism is another. Gravity.
The solar fire?
Yeah, any kind of fire. Yeah. Energy. Energy. Yeah.
Energy. Power. Yeah. So without the seemingly integrated.
If you don't set up this diversity, then there's no interaction, there's no relationship.
So even though it feels comfortable to our present state of evolution, without it, we wouldn't be able to evolve beyond where we are now.
Mm-hmm. Right. We wouldn't have got even here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's read on. Who's next?
His being is a mystery to the mind. His ways boil the mortal ignorance. Definite in its little section sparked and ways creates not words of this. It could be the unimagined all and might one infinite. Against human reason, this is his offense. Being known to be forever unknowable. To be all and yet transcend the mystic all. Absolute to Lord in a relative world of time. Eternal and all-knowing to suffer birth. Omnipotent to support with chance and fate, spirit yet to be better and the void. Inimitable beyond form and name, to dwell within a body, one and supreme, to be animal and human and divine. A still deep sea, he loves in roaring waves, universal, he is all transcend none.
Thank you. Let's pause there. Anybody would like to ask anything? Yeah, this is, for us, this is contradictory. No? He's everything, but he's also not limited by any of these things that he's made from himself, that he still identifies with. Our mental consciousness always cuts things into opposites. And that's why Sri Aurobindo is using this paradoxical language, seems to make contradictory statements to open up our minds. And I was just reflecting that in order to really, I mean, this knowledge now, Sri Aurobindo is handing it down to us, we can try to grasp it with our minds. But to live in this awareness, as Savitri is doing, one needs to have a contact with the supramental. In the Life Divine, he describes how the characteristic of the supramental truth consciousness is that it can maintain three poises at the same time. That's not possible for us. We are in one state of consciousness. We may be very alert and our reasoning is working. And then the mind gets tired, and then we might drift into a kind of dreamy state where images come to us or different kinds of unformed thoughts. But we can't do that at the same time. But the higher consciousness can experience the oneness, and within the oneness, all the potentialities, all these infinite possibilities, and at the same time be identified with every single one of those separate individual potentialities. And Sri Aurobindo says that's how creation is possible, that the one can hold these three states, consciousnesses, at the same time, three poises of consciousness, reconciling all these. It's not only two, it's not only this and that, it's also three. And the other trinity, which is very important, is the transcendent, the absolute, the universal, and the individual. And these are three modes of consciousness.
You say that Sri Aurobindo says this is how creation is possible, and I can't follow
you. Yeah. To read what he says, he will say it more clearly. But yes, that first there's the one, just experiencing the oneness. But at the same time, the one can experience within itself all its potentialities. And then it can project those potentialities so they become, as it were, separate individualized forms of itself, which it identifies with. Sorry for the inadequacy of human language. Sri Aurobindo does it much better here. Yeah.
There's like this experience of the self.
Yeah.
I think, or of, let's say, the Purusha or something, and stands back.
And watches.
It watches the world in all the dualities. So in a sense, that consciousness encompasses both.
Yeah.
But still there's this division that those dualities just kind of go on, and they're not really affected by that.
By
watching.
The oneness, yes.
And so I think what he brings in, this kind of third element, is that those are then transformed in some way by that.
By the gaze.
So that they also then become divine, or they are changed. So.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's this unique.
That's the upward way that she speaks about. So he lists all, or Savitri lists these contradictions here, no? And that's why, she says, that's why we can't follow him. We're amazed, we're bewildered. Our mortal ignorance is bewildered by this. We are finite. We are cut off into our little separate sections, no? So we can't believe in, or we may believe in part of us, but we don't, it's not a living experience for us, that the oneness, the unimagined all, no? And can see and act in that infinite way. He is one, known, but at the same, we can, in a way, know the Lord, but he's forever unknowable. He is all this, and yet he transcends the whole. If he's absolute, how can he also be relative? No? But he does. That absoluteness dwells within this relative world of time. The One is eternal, all-knowing. And yet in us, in his creatures, he goes through birth and death. He's all-powerful, but in his creation, in his creatures, identified with them all, he plays with this play of chance and fate. He's spirit. We have a conception of what spirit is. But at the same time, he's matter. And at the same time, he's the emptiness, the nothingness. He's illimitable, beyond form or name. And yet he dwells within a body. He's one and supreme. At the same time, he is animal and human and divine. That's the line you were thinking of. Hmm? He's like a deep ocean.
He keeps it together. There's no two without three. The three is keeping it all together.
Yes. He's laughing in his waves. He's a vast, immeasurable ocean, but he expresses himself in his individualized forms, these transient wave forms. No? He's universal. He's all this. But in his transcendent existence, he's not identified or not limited by any of it. So this is her answer to death's insistence on the permanence of duality.
But I just recognize that the divine humor comes exactly from all these points. Mm-hmm. So when you are cling too much to one, and then the divine laughter is there because there are the other points too.
Yes. Let's read a little further. Tera.
He knows righteousness. This is his cosmic time. Almighty, beyond good and evil to dwell, leaving the good to their fate in a wicked world and evil to reign in this enormous scene. All opposition seems and strife and chance. An aimless labor is but scant sense to eyes that see apart and miss the whole. The surface men scan, the depths refuse their search. A hybrid mystery challenges the view, or a discouraging and sordid miracle. Yet in the depth intentions start and see. In the casual error of the world's ignorance of planning, that little intelligence is glimpsed. There is a purpose in each stumble and fall. Nature's most careless dwelling is a pulse, preparing some forward step, some deep reserve. Ingenious notes plucked into a motive score. These yelling discords dot the harmonious theme true supreme has forced the world to be. It has wrapped itself in matter as in a shroud, a shroud of death, a shroud of...
Thank you.
Nature's most fearless rolling and fall, it means it is carefully planned.
Yes. Yes. It prepares something, yes. Yeah.
The beauty in this picture is really in discords to dot the harmonious scene.
Mm. They've been put there in purpose, on purpose. These things that sound so inharmonious, the discords, they are there for a reason. They're preparing something that will come next. Composers do this. A truth supreme has forced the world to be the way that it is and the way that it's going to be. This hybrid mystery, something that's a hybrid, is a mixture of two plants that are put together. No? To the duality of the world, yes. A hybrid mystery, that it's divine and human and animal, conscious and unconscious, personal and impersonal. But because it's a hybrid, we can't understand it. We can't grasp what it's supposed to do. Because our eyes see only a part. We miss the whole. So it looks like everything is strife and chance, or something's gone serious wrong. No? Okay, it's a miracle. But it's a discouraging and sordid miracle that we live in. You wanted to say something?
Yeah, actually, I have some questions which go far beyond this, because we are talking about what is our role in this creation.
Yes.
And usually we identify ourselves very easily with one point.
Yes.
Of course, always the better.
Yeah. Fact, what seems to be the better at the time, yeah.
It was ironic. So, to accept that there is always duality brings me to the question, so what is then the real better way of looking?
Yes.
You know what I mean? So, and also, what is actually the most evolutionary thing we can do?
Yes.
That's actually...
Which everyone has to answer individually, no? Mother says if we have to make choices, rather than trying to make choices between what's right and what's wrong, it would be better to try and see what leads us towards the light and what seems to push us back into the darkness. Something like to drag us back. This perhaps
divine,
each of us.
What takes you to the divine, what deviates you from
yes.
That should be.
Well, she said of the dualities, perhaps the best one to focus on is truth and falsehood. So, which one, what leads you forward and what seems to pull you back? But everybody has to see for themselves, and even if you make a mistake, it's not final.
Stepping back and meditating, we all to the higher world. That is finding the process where you can.
But sometimes it's really puzzling, isn't it? What do you want me to do, Lord? So.
It's not always simple.
No, not at all. No. Yes.
In spite of all our endeavor to be on the side of truth.
Yeah.
But if we see back our life, if we notice what happened that was so worse, maybe now when we see that was
after all the best thing that could happen.
Our life is planned in a very larger perspective than we see.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, that's it.
Mm. Yeah, even worse things in the distance can look suddenly very different.
Yes.
That
yeah, I think that's what Dharmarayana is trying to communicate. Things that seem like absolute disasters in your life at the time, afterwards, sort of perspective of long time, you see what a blessing, what a blessing. Shall we stop there for today? You had something to ask? Yet in the exact inconscience, stark conceit, in the casual error of the world's ignorance, a plan, a hidden intelligence is glimpsed. Perhaps this is what we were just speaking about, no? There is this stark, austere, unadorned concept, we can say, in the inconscient, that darkness and inertia and negation. But out of that emerges something else, but it's this state of ignorance, casual error. Things just happen like they happen, apparently, without reason, no? But behind that, behind the darkness of the beginning, the confusion of the emergence, a plan, a hidden intelligence is glimpsed. And Savitri gives the assurance, no? There is a purpose in each stumble and fall. Nature's most careless lolling, when she seems not to be having any purpose at all, just lying about lazily, it's preparing some forward step, some deep result. So that is what we could have faith in, that one who has made this world is ever its Lord, and he is guiding things forward and enabling things to happen in the best possible, in the present conditions of the universe. Do we have Mother's voice of some of these lines?
Maybe I would guess before the duality and then Savitri. Right?
Yes, yeah.
Immutable, this denial made perfect. All things hang here between God's yes and no. Two powers, real, but to each other unto. Two concert stars in the moonlight of mine, that towards two opposite horizons gave. The white head and the black tail of the mystic drake, the swift and the lame foot, wing strong, wing broken, sustaining body of the uncertain world, a great surreal dragon in the woman answered to the mighty shape, and as she spoke, mortality disappeared. Her goddess self grew visible in her eyes. Light came, a dream of heaven, into her feet. On summit mind, our radiant attitude, exposed to the luster of infinity. outskirts and dependencies of the house of truth. A cosmic saw spreads out its vastitude. Its smallest parts are here. Philosophies challenging with their detailed immensity.
Thanks to Shobindo.